up, beefs? August 25th, 2020. Yeah, the 25th. Was listening to the Rogan Nikki Glaser episode. I don't remember what 1500 or whatever it is. Some 1500 3-hour shows. It's like almost 5,000 hours. Now the first when I first started listening, I was trying to find other podcasts to listen to because at the time I had tons of time. I would come home from work and I would go straight to the Xbox, throw on the podcast. I was listening about 2 hours in the morning during a workout. I didn't work out for 2 hours, but the drive to the gym, get changed, work out, drive to work, about that. So like, you know, I guess an hour and a half actually listening to stuff. And then I'd get like an hour or two at work every once in a while. I didn't really start that until the Rogan thing. And then I sort of got overwhelmed with podcasts. Like, you know, I started, Jordan Peterson's interesting. So I'm listening to that. And I start listening to it. That's cool. And a buddy of mine is like, man, if you're into F1, you should check out. I've tried two British podcasts about F1. One of which, I like the American crappy one I listen to. But anyway, it's like, they just start to stack. Like, there's a bunch that I should just unsubscribe. I just delete them off my subscriber list. I listen now. I'm just like, no time for you, no time for you, no time for you. It's like stuff that's at the bottom. And a lot of it's like fun stuff. But it's not, like, I don't get anything out of it. There's one called ZBT, which is about military stuff. But they're pretty lefty. So I'm not all that interested in, like, left light. Because they're not like, hyper. They're just on the, there's, like, center. And, whatever. I don't know. It just doesn't do it for me. But I was listening to one. I can't remember the name of it. It's like a panel show. It's as if you're watching a TV show panel show, but you just can't see them. And so there's like a host, and then there's like a bunch of guys, and they're like referencing their age, and it's like, man, I can't tell how old you are. I don't know who you are. Apparently one of them was famous in England, and one of the guys like asks about like, man, you're big on this black lot. It makes a joke like about the drivers having to clean something, and because how about the guys that stood for the Black Lives Matter thing they did at the beginning of the season. I think they do it at every race. The coverage doesn't show it. Doesn't mention it. Anyway, but they have the end racism thing everywhere, which the soccer does too. Anyway, the guy said something about like, well, I got a lot of flack for the Black Lives Matter. Mind you, these are English people. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. What? Why are you English people all about this? I don't get, like, man, I have some mild interest in European politics, like a tiny bit. But I don't get all bent out of shape over Tommy Robinson. I mean, I know who he is, which makes me like, probably puts me in the 10%. If not, 30 million? Probably not. Like, I understand, like, Brexit, because I talked to a British person about it. I know who Tony Blair is, right? But I'm not getting all, like, up in arms about some esoteric thing about how they do some specific thing. And yet, this guy is. That always gets me. I'm like, dude, what has that got to do with you? I know Americans. See, this is the problem. The problem is that Americans getting everybody else. So now everybody else is like, well, if they're getting my stuff, I'm going to get through that. You know, where if you're going to be a country that like sits around going like, we have to invade Iraq because we invade Iraq because they thought they had weapons of mass destruction. You can sit there and say that they were lying. They weren't. And here's why they weren't. Because the people in Iraq thought he had it. So all the sources they were using believed he had. It wasn't a lie. Colin Powell wasn't shilling. He was tricked. But he wasn't even like, it wasn't, it's so hard to explain. Like the here it is. Saddam Hussein had to, or at least thought, he had to make his population believe he had these weapons of mass destruction. And he couldn't be seen, in his mind at least, as being weak on whatever. Because in what happens is, the Sunni minority was oppressing Shiite majority, and then a Kurdish minority, right? So whenever you're an ethnic minority in a country and you're oppressing the other people, which almost invariably happens, including the United, which is Black Lives Matter, basically fighting against, even though they're kind of off, I think. That's essentially what they're mad at. It's one ethnic group in the same geography messing with another ethnic group. That's where Saddam was. And if you're in the minority, and again, you see that, you kind of see that in the United States where, like, I guess it's not like so as much of an ethnic thing, but they view themselves different ethnically. So like the West Coast people and the Flyover Country people, or the West East Coast people, which I'm one, view the Flyover Country people as like less than, as another thing. Not like, they're not like us. They're all racist. So they like hate them and oppress them. And in order to do so, it gets worse and worse and worse. And that's where you have to be more and more, like, in order to enforce your will, you're not doing it in a nice way, which they're not. If there's, like, obvious discrepancies, like, just blatant hypocrisy and double standards, you have to get more and more severe. And that's where Saddam Hussein was at the time. So he had to convince everyone that he had this stuff to scare them into behaving. So it's not like we were tricked into the weapons of mass destruction. We weren't. We actually believed it. My argument is, who cares if he has chemical weapons? And if he gets nuclear weapons, guess what? He's not going to do S. Those are defensive deterrent weapons. They're not offensive. It's pointless. Think about it. I'm Saddam Hussein. I get nuclear weapons. Well, now I'm going to take Kuwait. No, you're not. Because now, if you have nuclear weapons and you go to war with another country that has nuclear weapons, they're going to use them. Possibly first, right? Like, a war with India-Pakistan isn't going to be, oh, we're going to have a conventional war, and then whichever side loses, we'll use nukes. No. It's going to be like, oh, India invaded, Pakistan's going to launch. So that keeps India from invading. Now, the fear is that Saddam Hussein would give those weapons to terrorists. That was like the 90s, man. If you remember the 90s, it was all about Russian suitcase bomb. Tom Clancy wrote a novel. I think it's Sum of All Fear. Ben Affleck and the black dude, Morgan Freeman as Greer, and Affleck is Jack Ryan. It's a movie. Those are before the heroin addiction got to him. He wasn't addicted to heroin. He like had a pain pill problem and gotten. So it wasn't like, but once we got in there, it was all about how we were, oh, there's no weapons of mass destruction. Whoops. I really wish these people could just say, well, look, we thought they were here. We really believe they were here. Now we're not finding them. But you have to understand that we truly believe that they were here. This isn't like they were looking for them. It wasn't like, they got in there and went, whoops. It was like months, a year before they were like, hey, I think we got it now. We finally, like, because they beat the military right away. But that doesn't mean you, I guess it was we. I was on that team. I wasn't in that game. I was on the training. We beat their military right away. But what we didn't do is, you don't secure the entire, it's fairly large. Kuwait's tiny. Iraq, on the other hand, is larger, and there are lots of places to look. And once they looked everywhere, it took a while to get around to looking everywhere, especially because kind of the insurgency started right away. And the big mistake there was de-Ba'athification. A lot of this Iraq war, they went in there and they said, like we're gonna get anyone that was in power before is out, and we're not gonna let, you're only gonna be replaced by, we're gonna replace it. Can't do I don't know why they were so anti-Ba'athist, because the people, it was a dictatorship in the truest of sense. I mean, you had a Ba'ath party, and they're in Syria as well, but they're not, it's not like, this guy was just the strong man. It wasn't like, they didn't have elections. They didn't have, well, they did, but the kind of super, it's just, that guy was clearly the man, clearly. And you could say, well, some of these guys were complicit in his crime. But then you take out the dudes that are at the top. Like, you take out, it's like taking over a company. You don't, even when, in the business world, when you take over a company, sometimes they let management hang out and sometimes they don't. And when they don't, what usually happens, they chop off the top. Usually, universally, like, the top guy will have to go, and then a lot of his immediate subordinates, and then maybe, like, another level down, but unlikely. You don't get rid of the workforce, especially the blue-collar workforce, which, by the way, the executives view as cattle. And they, but you don't, even at the higher levels, even in hostile takeovers, you're probably not getting rid of every director, because now you're going to get in a situation where nobody knows anything and it'll be a disaster. You get rid of the top guy, that's easy to, you can get rid of like the C-suites, that's easy to do. If you just cut the head off and replace it. The body knows how to function while the head reoriented. Now, some of these business guys can do it fairly quickly, but you see it in the military all the time. It's funny because the officers are moved through positions quickly, and one of the reasons I was told that that's the case is because they don't want any single officer to ever create a cult of personality, to like ever really have a power. If you left, if you oriented the army, you went to a post, you didn't leave unless you wanted to. Like, you could stay there for years and years, and you were a lieutenant, and you stayed there for you being a captain, and you were, then you made like major, but you didn't move. And then eventually you became the CO of this thing, and the other, you had a bunch of other lieutenant colonels there that were like your whatevers and so on and so forth, and you just sort of got promoted along, you know, like if there would be like one, you know, because there's say 30 lieutenant. Let me think, how would this break down? There'd be mostly captains and the pilot, which are the would be like the executive side of this. You'd go lieutenant, you'd be captain. You could keep all the captains at the major level. Some of the majors would stay and stay on as flight, and some of them would move on to admin positions at the MAG or whatever. And let's say you just that major just stayed until he was either CO or moved on. Once you became CO, you either you moved on to the MAG level as a executive officer, whatever, and then became the MAG CO. That's sort of like a more corporate, instead of, because the way the military works is you go to the unit, you stay there a few years. It's not long at all. I managed to stay in the same place 5 years. It was A, a mistake, and B, partly due to illness, and C, partly due to, I had a friend of mine in the Marine Corps whose wife had decided that if he went on one more deployment, she was leaving. She couldn't take another. And so he comes up to me, he's like, I was the only, so I had about a year before this happened, I told our powers that be that if they don't change training, they're going to run out of mid-level Huey pilots, meaning you're not creating enough. You're taking junior guys and you're turning them into basic combat co-pilot, but you're not creating enough what's called a helicopter commander, section lead, WTO NSI, right? The WTI, like Super Ninja, even NSI, you don't really need that for function as a combat unit. What you need is division and section lead, and it's nice to have WTOs. I was like, you don't have any of these low level instructor, high level combat capable, basically leaders. You don't have unit leaders. You have a lot of pilots. You're going to create a ton of co-pilots, and you're going to end up not having any mid-level leaders. Now, the reason that was happening was because they always do something like, it's like almost like just-in-time inventory. They did like just-in-time. You wait till the last second, you find a guy that needs to go somewhere, and you just push him. He becomes like the main effort. It's just about one or two guys. I mean, there's other stuff happening periphery, but it's like, well, Nick Kandra now needs to get here. And you get pushed like crazy, and then you stop being the main effort, and then it's like nothing. You're not doing anything. And that just happened over and over and over again. All right, so great. You're in a position where you really don't know when that's going to change. So when you're getting pushed through, it kind of sucks because it just becomes overwhelming day in, day out, like three flights a week. And like, where you're briefing and leading, and it can be overwhelming. And when it's the opposite, you're left in a situation where you're not doing anything. You start to feel left out, blah, blah, blah. But I brought this up. I was the training officer, and I said, look, right now, the way we have it and the way we've created this, you're going to run into the situation where you're just not going to hear like a graphic. You don't know what you're talking about. Okay, that's it. I brought it up. I don't care. I brought up the problem. I brought up my solution. You don't like either. You don't believe that the problem I'm telling you is real, and littering, and you don't. We wouldn't like the solution even. And why would they do this? Why would they put themselves in this situation? And let me tell you how far they went to avoid this. I was given a certain goal. I had 5 or 6 months to train so many co-pilots. Let's say 5 or 6. I don't remember exactly. I don't even want to count them in my head. They mainly annoyed me. I liked one of them. One of them hated me. It was, but whatever. Okay, so what? So I saw that and I said, okay. So I start doing the training process and I get them done early. At which point, a guy not even associated with the operations or training department, where was the maintenance officer, comes up and says like, oh, well, you've completed those training, but to keep it, I was in the group of like, I was already fully combat capable for our missions. I could do everything we were doing. I had like all the prerequisites. And I was kind of trying to get the instructor quals, but no, I mean, I didn't care that much. But there were a bunch of pilots that were in that. I'm like, you probably should train these guys. And he did have a valid point. He's like, look, this person, they're going to leave. But out of six, I'm like, dude, you got six people. Two, yeah, are probably going to leave out of here. So that leaves four that are going to, I mean, he's like, well, we don't need that many of, we don't, because we're always running out. Oh, there's no shortage, Nick. You just don't know. You're not seeing it right. There's things you don't see. Like, okay, whatever. But what's the real reason, I think? Well, the guy that was doing that was trying to keep other people from becoming instructor pilots. Because I think he was, for lack of a better word, and it's going to sound completely insane, I still have a hard time with it. I believe he was addicted to flying the way people are addicted to sex, gambling, or heroin. I think he was completely and utterly, would do anything and everything to get flight time, and everything he saw as a obstacle to that, because he tried to mess with me, because I tried to even out the flight time, and I found out that that's like every other budding socialist, you realize that people don't actually want that, okay? Because half of the people were mad at me for flying them too much, I kid you not, and then half of them were like, why don't I get more flight time when I asked for it? So eventually, he went back to that anyway. He made sure of it. I would got there anyway. He didn't, I mean, he messed with me, but he wouldn't have had to, because I got there too. After one of my friends like kind of went crazy in Iraq, I was like, okay. I was like, okay, you don't want to fly, don't fly. I was trying to make everyone carry the load, and it created like so much hatred for me that like, because I imagine you're on a hike, and I was like, okay, we got 10 people and there's 200 pounds. Everybody got to grab 20 pounds. And there was a guy that was like, I want to carry 50. F you. And then there were people in the back going like, I'm not going on this hike. That's what it was like. I didn't much like that. I was like, what is that? I had a hard time understanding. Okay. I had a hard time. And that's because it's really at that time I was solipsistic, and I was having a hard time understanding people, because I couldn't see things. I lacked the empathy to see it through their eyes. Wasn't a dick. But I had a hard time understanding the different points of view. So it led to me having issues, because I was very forceful in the way that I did it. Like, I just was like, I'm in charge of this. This is how I'm doing it for you, which is incorrect. So that was a lesson learned there. But he was intentionally suppressing, I think, what he viewed as a threat to his kind of power, his status, but I think most importantly was the flight stuff. He moved heaven. He was ruining his career by staying in the squadron too long and not doing the checking little boxes he needed to check. Eventually, he was stopped by headquarters Marine Corps. Not like, oh no, you're not going to get to do your thing. They were just like, we can't let you. If you do this, you'll be unpromotable. He was kind of like, I don't care. He had an addiction to it. Anyway, it's the only thing that in my mind makes his behavior make sense. Because if you're just worried about the status, you're not going to actually worry about the amount of flight time. It's just the amount of perceived, once you have the qualification, it gives you the status. Anyway, but yeah, they, and then it's funny because I got everything done early that we're supposed to do, and instead of being like, good job, Nick, I got this. This, I kid you not, it'd be like, imagine a salesperson, you tell them, sell 50 units, you got 6 months to sell 50 units, and 3 months in or something, he comes in and goes, I'm at 45 already, let's set a new goal. And instead of like saying good job, they just turn around and go, no, we said it. And you're like, wait, what? Or you hit your 50 units at like 3 months. And they go, no, the goal was actually 80. And you're like, no, it was 50. I get my bonus. Like, no. Not only that, but you're not doing that great. In fact, you were supposed to be at 80 already. It was sort of like that. They told me I did a bad job. And then he said, because we had Marine Corps Nav Air standards we had to hit. Nav Air is Navy aviation, like, standardization thing. And they needed to hit a certain amount of training. And then, out of nowhere, he goes, all right, well, you hit the minimum, but now we're going to, like, up the ante there. And I'm like, but if that was their minimum training, and we have this other shortfall, you know, I mean, that's a matter of priorities at that point, right? But at least I should have got an attaboy for, like, hey, man, way to go. Way to get the training done on time. Instead, what I got was, the perception is that you're doing a bad job. He didn't say it. Like, my boss didn't say, you're doing a bad job, because I wasn't. He said, the perception. And I was like, but I hear the metrics. And the guy was like, yeah, yeah, but it looks like. And I'm like, what do you mean it looks like, bro? Like, you don't like my face, is what you're saying. Is like, now I had a dour attitude. But Jesus Christ, I met the numbers. You gave me a goal. I hit it. And now that I've hit it, you told me I did I hit it in half the time. And now, I mean, it's not all me, right? I didn't fly all those flights. I didn't, you know, single-handedly do this. So sales is probably like not the, like, sales leader. Like, I was like the sales, I was leading the sales team. And the sales team included things like the logistics guys to get the stuff there on top. I don't know what more I can do. If anything isn't going to take the wind out of your sails, I just sort of gave up. I was like, all right, well, if exceeding the limits, exceeding the expectations means I'm perceived as bad, there's nothing I can do. Because now you want me to change my face, right? And I don't have that ability. I don't, I can't change my personality overnight. So, okay, you don't like me. It's clear. So, goodbye. But it's frustrating. And then, right on schedule. So, we get back from this deployment and I get what would be kind of like a dream outside, like, and it was a search and rescue in Yuma, Arizona. All right, so partly a dream job. The job itself is great. The location is absolutely horrible. I was going to, like, possibly a worse small town, even further from my parents, where, like, I would just be by myself. Oh, I kind of knew that. But the job itself was going to be, like, kind of cool. It's search and rescue for an airbase out there. They fly Hueys, and so is primarily a flying gig. I'm sure that there was all kinds of the collateral duty BS that you have to go through, and you have to go through a syllabus again, but meaning you become a student again. But hey, it's a good place to just ride it out, like, the last couple years. And so it was great. I really didn't have any complaints. I was like, holy crap, they actually gave me the thing I wanted. Like, how did this happen? Right? You finally get your toy. It's like Christmas. And you've been getting New Balance and asking for Nike for years. And that's the pair of Nikes. You could see it under the... And then a buddy of mine comes up to me and says, hey, man, if I deploy again, my wife's going to leave me. Will you please take a deployment? And there's a little bit more to it. But I said, yeah. It wasn't quite that simple. The guy that was going to be the leader of the what's called the H1 deck was a dude that absolutely despised me. I just talked about him. Bull. I butted heads with him. And quite frankly, a lot of it was bad attitude, Nick. Now, the guy was a little weird and had issues. But that being said, I can't... This is one of these times where I'm going to have to take ownership. I didn't used to. I used to just blame it on him. Be like, this guy's dick. Yeah, man. This guy's dick. Well, what did you do? Well, what did you do to get him kind of look at you that way? And, well, I had a bad attitude towards him before I met him. I had heard bad things about him, and it made up my mind. One, not good. Not a good way to go. Two, because his mentality, he was actually, like, as far as his mentality on how to treat Marines, and he was a Huey Pop, was more in line with, in fact, we probably should have been buddies. But I had a bad attitude, and he sometimes was a little hard on the students where it was causing me a problem. They were all scared of him, and it didn't help that he was failing them. And then, but were they failing? I don't know. Most of them were not the best in the world. But, you know, no students are. They were normal. And then there was just a couple of things. There were two things that really, one that kind of, he tried to teach me how to do my operations job. And I really chafed at it because I didn't understand the Huey Cobra dichotomy. And he did. And he was kind of like, hey, you're a Huey guy. I'm a Huey guy. We got to do our own thing. But I was like, no, I work for ops. My boss is the Cobra. The Cobra guy viewed me as some kind of like, and not just me, but any Huey person inside the, as like something that he didn't want. Like some kind of like foster child that, or adopted kid that was all the wife's thing. And he was sort of like, I gotta feed you and clothe you, but don't, we're not playing catch, bro. Just stay out of my way. It wasn't mean. He wasn't abusive. He was actually kind of a decent guy. He just understood that Huey Cobra mentality and was just like, dude, you're a Huey pilot. Go over there and do Huey stuff. We're over here doing Cobra stuff. Don't come over here. You're not one of us, right? So, okay, I guess that's where I am. I didn't know that. I did not understand. So I'm like, but you're my dad. But the other guy was like, no, I'm your dad. That's so weird to like talk about it like that. And so eventually, so I end up in this guy's office. Like, he wants, the maintenance officer wants to see you. So I go down there. I'm like, what's up? He starts talking to me about scheduling. The whole time, I'm just chafing. I also chafe whenever someone tries to help me. I'm just a jerk. I have to fight it. It's not good. I have a lot of problems. And this is one of those problems where I see my kid has the same thing. Whenever someone tries to, I'm like, I get this weird feeling that I can't describe as like, stop doing this. Let me figure it out. That's not good. You'll do better if you don't have that attitude. Okay, so I'm sitting there and I'm in this guy's office going, why is the maintenance officer? He starts telling me his resume. Like, look, I'm going to teach you how to do this. I did this at MOTS, the most complicated place on earth to do this, so I can tell you how to do it. He starts like showing me diagrams. And right away, I'm like, the other thing is he didn't know everything. This is the problem. Sometimes you see it in politics where one side's trying to talk to the other. They make some tiny technical error and then it's like, you're a retard. But that's not true. He just didn't know some of the details. I'm like, I can't do that because that guy's going on a doctor's appointment. That guy's getting a knee replacement. That guy's like, you know what I mean? I'm like poking holes in them. I'm like, you can't, it's not that simple. You're acting as if these guys are just available. They're not. And at that point, I'm like, this guy doesn't even, okay. Okay. This is like, you know, so much better, but you don't have the detail. But he wasn't trying to do that. He was giving me examples. And I was just like, I don't want, like, F you, leave me alone. And I think he was like, what? I'm trying to help this guy. And tell, man, fuck this guy. No dice. Okay. I just didn't realize what was going on. Partly because I was young and experienced and naive. Partly because I was so angry. I was going through a lot of like mental issues and I hated it. And I wasn't sleeping. I mean, it was like, I was barely holding it together. To see the subtleties of human interaction at those levels that I'm discussing were beyond my overloaded mind, which had the smoke. Imagine your computer at full use. You've overclocked it. To gearheads, I was revving above red. Like, you know, if you go like a couple hundred RPM above red line, energy's not going to explode. But there's not much left. So if you floor it, it will. And that's where I was. So I'm just annoyed. This guy's wasting my time. And so, there you have it. I just went at it with him constantly. And then, a little while later, they were having problems with a lot of the other pilots. I love testing. A lot of the other pilots hated. So they would kind of, they weren't showing up to the maintenance meeting, or they would do this. As a check pilot, you had to go to the maintenance meeting so you understood what was going on. And I would check out during the Cobra section, and I would perk up when they got to the Hueys or vice versa. If they did the Hueys first, I'd be awake, and they'd get to the Cobras, and I'd go to sleep. And then you would finish that meeting, you'd go upstairs, you get what's called an FCF. It's just part of, you have to get like your weather told to you and a bunch of other stuff to make it so that you can fly safely. Well, I don't know what these guys were doing, but I don't think they were showing up to the maintenance meeting. They weren't barely showing up to the brief. They would just go, like, they'd show up when they felt like it, and then they would go get the brief at 8:30, and it's supposed to be at 7. And then they wouldn't show, the maintenance would be calling for, and they wouldn't show up. So he was having these issues. I didn't know, because no one. And he comes up to me and explains all this, and he goes, I want the brief to now be 6:45. And I was like, oh my God. First of all, I live 45 minutes away, so 7 o'clock meant I was leaving at 6:15 or 6 o'clock in the morning or something. So I could wake up at 6 and make it to the maintenance meeting on time by like a minute. You know, I'd like wobble in 2 minutes late, 5 minutes early. If you made it 6:45. I was getting up at like 5, and I was just, and I love to do this thing. So I'm like, no way, I'm not doing that. So we fought about that. And obviously he won because he was the ranking dude and blah, blah, blah. So that was like another thing I did. And then I just would butt heads with him on stuff. Was, you know, I avoided him. And yeah, so it was, a lot of that was my fault. I've done a much better job of mitigating this, even if he had it. You know what I mean? Like, I could have just, I shouldn't have been so belligerent, but I was. And that's a mistake that I made. I'm not excusing some of, like, he would torment the new lieutenants. They all hated him. They all hated flying with him. They would come in and beg not to, like, they were running in to talk to me to get it so that I wouldn't schedule them with him. I don't know how many pep talks I had to give about, like, you're not a terrible pilot. Everybody goes through this. Like, it was half my job was sitting in a room with another grown man doing the, I'm so proud of you, you're great, caused by. So, you know, it's not entirely my fault. All right, thanks for listening. Definitely didn't intend to talk about this, but love you, bye.